Canadian apparel maker Gildan Activewear won a bankruptcy auction to buy American Apparel for about $88 million in cash. Gildan will not take any of American Apparel's 110 stores, but will get the rights to its brand and some of its manufacturing equipment.
This week, Oliver Schmidt is behind bars. The VW executive has been charged with fraud and conspiracy by not disclosing a cheating device used to rig U.S. diesel emissions tests.
The big investment theme this year, Donald Trump. The president-elect is pushing for deregulation, lower taxes, infrastructure spending, and import tariffs. Another factor, the Federal Reserve plans to keep hiking interest rates. That could further strengthen the dollar.
These two sectors of the market should really benefit with the new administration. I mean, they practically put in the absolute dream team for greed.
Tonight it's my turn to say thanks.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Wednesday. It's January 11th, 2017. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day. We've got lots to cover today. We will hear all through the morning the goodbyes from President Obama and the First and Second Families, who were in Chicago last night delivering a stirring speech and address, urging people to continue on with how they view the world in terms of Obama's eyes, Mr. Obama's eyes, saying at the end of his speech last night, yes, we did. Yes, we can. Yes, we could. Yes, we can. And it was a moving speech, lasted about an hour or so. He shook hands here in Chicago as well. You also heard one of the cuts in there. Donald Trump is back in the news today for all kinds of reasons. He has a news conference later this morning, and he is at the top of our show today because world stock markets are down from recent highs because of the news conference coming up today and because of renewed concerns that there is going to be a trade war with China. We'll begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. The Dow futures are up 16. The S&P futures up just a little bit. The NASDAQ futures showing just a few points higher as well. Crude oil is trading up about a half a percent a barrel this morning, 51.07. Around the world, European markets are generally higher. Asian markets, however, were mostly higher on the back of a strengthening dollar and quiet trading ahead of this news conference from Donald Trump. But Japan's benchmark Nikkei only rose just a few ticks. Australia's market up just a little bit as well. Nothing in the way of a strong showing by any of the markets. Yesterday, the NASDAQ Composite Index showed its fourth record high close in a row, increasing about 20%. Today, we have a lot of things going on. In addition to that news conference, the World Bank forecasting the global economy will accelerate slightly in 2017 after turning in the worst performance last year in the 2008 financial crisis. The 189-nation lending agency says the global growth should expand at 2.7% annual rate this year. Back to the Donald Trump story, European shares are going back and forth throughout the night as there is this rising concern that there might be some sort of trade war with China. Trump has vowed to label China currency manipulator on his first day in office on January 20th and has threatened to slap huge tariffs on imports from China. House Speaker Paul Ryan and top members of Trump's transition team were also discussing a controversial plan to tax imports. Earlier this week, you probably heard the news, the Federal Transit Administration in town announcing money for the red and purple lines on the CTA.
This is a city with extraordinary history, and I know each of you here today believes that there is a future even greater than the past. And to get there, we cannot stand still. We cannot neglect a public transportation system that is overburdened and growing.
That's Carolyn Flowers of the Federal Transit Administration. Mayor Emanuel also at that news conference earlier this week.
And as every one of us who take public transportation know, I take the Brown Line in the morning to work on Monday and Tuesday, you get that congestion at Belmont. And this will alleviate that and allow us to make sure that people in the 21st century, have a 21st century public transportation system.
This is about $1 billion in federal money coming to Chicago. Let's welcome in Mary Wisniewski, who is the transportation reporter, getting around columnist for the Chicago Tribune, an old friend of mine. Mary, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's good having you. So, you know, the big question people have been asking is just how is this $1 billion worth of federal money going to be used?
The money is to improve the red line which is the busiest line on the CTA. It's going to build new stations between Lawrence and Bryn Mawr, and also new track. Part of the red line here is 100 years old. This is a very old part of the system, and there's a lot of problems here with delays. There's going to be new signals north of Belmont between Belmont and Howard, but the bulk of the money is – a lot of the money is going to be used for what they call the Belmont flyover, which is going to separate the red and purple line tracks from the brown line tracks just north of Belmont. And the idea there is to it's going to be a structure that's going to carry the brown line tracks over the red and purple line tracks. And the idea is to reduce congestion there. If you've ever been at the Belmont station, you know that it's incredibly crowded, and it's going to get more crowded as that part of the city's population grows. And so the idea is to add more trains per hour in that area.
Well, this is anybody who rides the red line, I do, is probably knows, and the purple line knows this is long, long overdue. And, you know, the question becomes, after we are all happy to see this happen, how is this going to be impacting our commute when the work starts on this? Is it going to be a major undertaking?
It's going to be a major undertaking, but trains are going to continue to run during that time. And, we're not going to see trains not running through that area. That would be a disaster for transit. So things are going to continue to run. And it's going to be, you know, like you see now with the Wilson Station, which is going on the Red Line, that's a complete rebuild. But traffic continues to go through that area. They're just moving it from one platform to another as new things go in.
Yeah, that's my station there, and it's almost unnoticeable if you're riding on the line. Obviously, there's a lot of things happening on the ground. So, Mary, when might we see actual construction on this get going and things happening?
It's going to be a while. They have to, you know, figure out the final engineering problems that they need to do there, so it's not going to start until 2018.
Mary Wisniewski of the Chicago Tribune to hang with us here for a minute. Mary, we're going to take a quick break to check traffic this morning. We're chatting with Mary Wisniewski of the Chicago Tribune. She's a Getting Around columnist, transportation reporter, and we'll continue our business conversation with her this morning on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, watching a couple of movers this morning, one in the positive direction. United Airlines is up about 3.5% pre-market. Mondelez International is off about 1.5%. The snack maker in the suburbs struggling this morning before the opening bell. This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors were sending mixed signals on Tuesday. The NASDAQ composite notched its fourth record high close in a row, rising 20 points to 55.51. The Dow slipped 32 points to close at 19.855. The S&P 500 was unchanged. The World Bank is forecasting the global economy will accelerate slightly in 2017 after turning in the worst performance last year since the 2008 financial crisis. In this country, more than 3 million people quit their jobs in November, the second highest level since the Great Recession of 2008. Analysts see it as a good sign that workers are confident enough in their skills and in their savings to leave their positions for new jobs. And apparently more of those workers are stopping by Chipotle for lunch or for dinner. Sales at established locations of that fast casual dining chain were up 14% in December. That may signal the end of the food safety scares that crippled Chipotle's business in the last year. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're chatting this morning with Mary Wisniewski of the Chicago Tribune. She's the transportation reporter, Getting Around columnist. Mary, before the break, we were talking about this money that the feds are giving Chicago for red line and purple line rehab. And we heard at the news conference earlier this week that this was sort of a last minute thing to get this money from the Obama administration. Is it likely that the Trump administration would not have provided this money to Chicago?
The CTA didn't say that. What they did say was that this was, you know, they were working with members of the Obama administration to get this money. And if it was delayed until after January 20th, it would have to work with all new officials, and it could take many months for the money to come in. And so they really felt that they needed to, you know, get this under the wire so that they were still working with the same people and there wouldn't be any delays in getting the money.
Part of the deal here is that the CTA is going to have to match some of this. How is that going to impact local taxpayers?
They're going to do that through a tax increment financing district that's newly created around the CTA tracks. And it's not going to affect your, it's not going to be your property taxes are going to go up because of the repairs to the red line. What this does is it takes a portion of property tax increases that are going to happen anyway, and it's going to use a portion of that in order to help pay for the project. And they're assuming that property taxes are going to be rising within that area partly because of improvements to the tracks, and partly because of just that area is going up financially. There's new development there.
The ridership, I think I saw one figure in your story about how it could go up 30% or at least carry a 30% rise in capacity.
Right. And they're already seeing great rises in capacity on the Red Line, and they expect that to continue. There's more high-density development that's going around in that area, so we're no longer – and what we mean by that is we go from having two flats and three flats in some areas to having high-rise buildings with many apartments. And there's also more of a tendency from millennials to not have cars and to take the train.
You have your finger really on the pulse of this situation, the Red Line. Some of these CTA tracks are 100 years old or older. How bad is infrastructure, transportation infrastructure in Chicago from your view?
According to transportation experts, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, not only on the CTA, but also on Metra and also on the streets. We haven't had a capital plan from Springfield since 2009, and so a lot of projects all over the state have been delayed because we're waiting for Springfield to kind of, they need to get their act together, according to transportation officials, start providing some capital money to transportation projects.
Yeah, I've heard some engineers, especially who've gone and looked at some of the bridges and roads in Illinois, and they give them all sort of D's and almost failing grades. Are we flirting with disaster in some cases?
I think that what we're flirting with is more delay, because you're going to want to close down a bridge before it actually falls into a river or something like that. But what you're going to see is bridges being shut down, or roads being narrowed, or roads not being accessible anymore. And you're also going to continue to see delays on if Metra can't get new engines for their trains, you're going to continue to see delays on Metra that are because of that.
As you look ahead to 2017, Mary, what would you say is another big transportation issue or transportation story that people should keep an eye on?
Well, one thing that we're going to see February 1st is higher Metra fares. And this has to do with what we just talked about, Metra needing more money for its infrastructure. So we're going to see 5.8% higher Metra fares, and that's going to work out to, if you have a monthly pass, it's going to be $11.75 more, and it's going to be $2.75 more for 10 rides. Some other things that we're going to see is you're still going to see construction at Western and Belmont. That's going to continue through mid-year. There's still going to be construction at Elston and Fullerton through the spring. And there's going to be a lot of work on highway interchanges, such as at Roselle Road and Elmhurst Road. We're also going to see one big project that's going to end is the Farnsworth Interchange on 88, if you're familiar with that, out by the Aurora Mall. We're going to see that project get done.
As we get ready to talk to our contributor from Detroit, from the Detroit Auto Show, we're seeing a lot of these autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars, eventually self-driving everything. How quickly do you think that we'll see that on the streets of Chicago or here in Illinois?
We're certainly slower about it than some other areas. Pittsburgh is already testing self-driving Uber cars. There's tests on self-driving cars in Michigan. What I'm hearing from experts is that we won't start seeing them generally and for another 20 years, but we are getting ready for them here. One of the things that the Illinois Tollway is doing is building what they call a smart road on I-90, where there's going to be electronic signals telling us what the traffic is like ahead, telling us what delays are like ahead. And part of that has to do with being ready for autonomous vehicles.
One of the other issues that we've been seeing, or at least one of the other bright spots, I think, of the new administration coming in, is his idea, Trump's idea, that maybe more money will be available just nationally for infrastructure programs. But the critics say that that might be just new projects and not fixing projects. What do you see from a national standpoint in that area? Do you think maybe more money might be coming to Chicago?
It's really hard to say, and I've talked to a lot of transportation experts about this, and they're very encouraged at the fact that the president-elect has said we're going to spend $1 trillion in infrastructure over the next 10 years, because the stuff is certainly needed. But the new administration has been a little vague on the details of how this is going to happen, where the money is going to come from. They've talked a lot about tax credits, but you know can't fund road projects and rail projects on tax credits alone. There has to be a continuing source of income. So people are kind of, you know, waiting and seeing and seeing, you know, what exactly this is going to entail.
Mary Wisniewski is the transportation reporter, getting around columnist at the Chicago Tribune. You can follow the Chicago Tribune, of course, at Chicago Tribune. Mary Wisniewski at Mary Wiz Chicago. Mary, good of you to be with us on the opening bell. We look forward to having you back.
Okay, thanks so much, Steve. Right, good to be here.
Thank you. It's 5:28 on the opening bell, and as we mentioned, we'll be going in the next segment to Detroit to the auto show, and Dale Buss will join us with some of the new cars that are being previewed there, and that'll be in our next segment. But right now at 5:28, over to the newsroom, Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic?
Hey, Steve. A stomach bug will keep hundreds of students home for a third day in a western suburb, and the president officially says his goodbyes. Our report next.
This is the opening bell.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, NASA's plan to make air travel more efficient. Simulators have long been a useful tool in professional flying, but this one isn't for pilots. Stephen Beard says NASA's future flight simulator is where air traffic controllers come to test new technologies.
The more realistic it is, the more immersive it is, the more they're going to perform like they would in a real tower.
Among the issues studied at the lab is how bad weather affects flight patterns. NASA's Kapil Chef.
They would file a flight plan which avoids that weather. But the thing is that when the aircraft actually takes off and gets to that point, the weather may have moved away.
Scientists say the new flight paths could result in up to 900 pounds of fuel savings. The simulator also targets another inefficiency, runway wait times.
We are expecting a full flight in.
NASA's Richard Koppenbarger says computers could help.
What we have is the ability to predict the future locations of aircraft and apply sophisticated algorithms to help schedule aircraft.
With Tech Trends, I'm Brad Milkey, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. The National Auto Show is underway at the North American Auto Show is underway. International Auto Show, I guess it's called NAIAS, is the an acronym on Twitter this morning. It is the big show in Detroit. All of the hot new cars are there. This is started January 8th, earlier this week. A lot of new announcements already. We thought we'd take you there this morning. And D.L. Buss, who's one of our contributors for Forbes also and for Brand Channel, is with us too this morning. Dale, good morning.
Good morning.
This is always the show where I have to sort of force myself not to go out and buy a new car after I see some of this stuff. It's and it's probably what it's designed for, isn't it? To get people all excited and maybe hit the dealerships?
Yeah, of course, like every auto show, the original intention of this one was to get folks in the local market excited about going out and buying a car, in this case in Detroit, in the dead middle of the winter. But over time, it's evolved into the major North American show place for auto companies and brands to, you know, show off their new products to the international press corps, and then, of course, by extension to consumers and everybody else. So there are 5,000 to 6,000 journalists, producers, bloggers, photographers, you name it, who've been here for the last 2 or 3 days for the press days. And interestingly, this year, NAIAS has added on a show that's all about mobility and self-driving and automation. So continuing today and tomorrow, there'll be a whole bunch of panels, seminars, discussions, networking around the mobility topic, which obviously is driving the auto industry for, you know, now and into the foreseeable future.
Well, since the show is really just getting underway, it may be hard to answer, but have you seen or will there be a car there that's going to be the must-have car of the year? What's the hot vehicle, I guess, is the best question.
Well, I think it's the Ford GT. It's the sports car that Mark Fields, the CEO, indicated a couple of years ago was coming down the pike, and now it's here and you can see it and touch it. Well, you can't drive it yet, but I think they're only going to produce a few hundred of them a year at a six-figure price. But that clearly is something that's, you know, drawing a lot of oohs and ahs all over the place. And 7 years into the recovery, you know, every company has got something that's pretty interesting to look at. But there are definitely a couple themes product-wise here that I've never seen to this extent before. One of them is self-driving is the talk. I mean, you can't buy a self-driven car yet, but within a few years, and that is all that anybody's talking about. The other is that slowly electric cars are overtaking the world, so you're seeing some new electric offerings here at the show as well.
Do you get a chance, Dale, to test drive, I guess that may be the wrong word, some of these self-driving cars? Have you actually been in one and had one drive you around yet?
I'm going to be doing that today. That part of what the Detroit Auto Show is offering this time is a little test track in one portion of Cobo Center, where some of the original small prototype self-driven vehicles are going to be demonstrated. So yeah, I'm going to get a taste of that today. And there have been self-driving sort of demonstrations at other auto shows as well. I mean, the technology clearly is just emerging, and there's only so much you can do safely and even legally. But that's the one thing the industry, including not just automakers, but also companies like Google and Uber, and of course the supply base for both of them, that's the one thing that they have to do is prove this concept. Obviously, the technology is there to guide a car safely, but because of legal regulatory questions, because people still like to drive cars, there's this huge hump for them to overcome in terms of performance and public expectations. And that's the next phase of self-driving.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd be too comfortable doing a test drive. You think that's the overriding feeling that you're going to have, is that you're not actually in control of the vehicle and you have to just sort of let whoever take the wheel?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, Google was publicizing already this week the first test drive by a human who's completely not in control of the vehicle, and it was out on regular urban streets. This is something they did a few months ago in Austin, Texas. Well, the passenger was a blind man. So question is how much further ahead he was having the car drive itself, and obviously he couldn't do it himself. He couldn't drive the car himself. So he was comfortable with it because for him it was a new measure of freedom, and of course that was the point. But for other folks, maybe not so much. And this is going to be an iterative thing. There are people at the auto show that I've talked to who say the prospect and promise of self-driving cars is way overblown. It's going to be 10 years before it's possible instead of 3. And that really is the playing field that we're looking at to determine the future of the industry in the next few years.
I know last year you and I had a conversation about the Chevy Bolt. Were you surprised to see that named North American Car of the Year?
No, because it was and remains a really fantastic proposition. It's a mainstream price car. It's all electric. It has a range of, I believe it's 238 miles to a charge. And that is enough to remove the notion of range anxiety from people. In other words, you just stick it in the garage, drive it a few times to work or shopping or whatever, to a soccer match each week. You don't really have to worry about recharging it, maybe even until the end of the week. And that's been the big bugaboo for electric vehicles, is people are afraid to take them out of the garage and, they'll run out of juice 20 miles from home. That's why it's such a revolutionary vehicle. And the other reason is that General Motors, slow, stodgy, traditional General Motors, managed to beat Tesla, this sleek newcomer in the market. They managed to beat Tesla to market by at least a year with the same kind of car. So Bolt EV really does have the potential to get electric vehicle demand over the hump. $30,000 after several thousand dollar federal tax credit, and sometimes there are state tax credits. So that's the kind of car that actually could make EVs a mainstream proposition.
Looks like a couple of other headlines from the show. What's old again is new again. Toyota is introducing its new Camry. Ford is bringing back the Bronco.
Yeah, this was a long-rumored thing that Ford did, bringing back both the Bronco, which, honestly, they don't necessarily need it, but everybody thinks of O.J. Simpson and the famous chase, right? And it was in 1996. That made the Bronco iconic. But SUVs are where the action is at these days, and trucks. And so Ford has a huge head start bringing back a nameplate that it did have that was one of the originals in the in the utility vehicle business. And they're going to have built-in demand for it right there, not to mention how the segment is booming. And they're also bringing back the Ranger midsize pickup truck. They made a mistake a few years ago by eliminating it, thinking that the quote-unquote lifestyle buyer for pickup trucks was gone. Well, General Motors has proven with Colorado and Canyon midsize truck bringing those back that there are very many of those buyers out there. And Ford made a mistake. They're going to bring back the Ranger as well.
We're also seeing Ford revamping this, the Ford F-150. This is a really popular truck. I know it is in my family, and my brothers have these vehicles. What is new? What are they putting new on the 2018 model?
It's kind of a general overall upgrade. I mean, the huge thing that Ford did, obviously, a year or two ago, was to bring out an aluminum bed, which has seemed to go well. You know, General Motors has kind of attacked it as not a worthy construction for a truck bed, but Ford F-150 continues to be the best-selling vehicle in the country. And this is known as kind of a mid-cycle refresh, it's called in the industry, for 2018. And it's really a bunch of tweaks. They redesigned the front-end grille and wheel options. They got some bolder seat colors, so if you want to go with fuchsia, Steve, you know, maybe you can find a fuchsia seats in your new F-150. Right. But the big move with F-150 was a couple of years ago. This is something to just kind of keep the momentum going.
And they also, is it the F-150 or one of their other vehicles they're actually putting in the bigger motor in that, or is that, am I thinking of something else?
I don't think they're offering a new engine option, the F-150. That may be something else.
Okay. So, you know, every year it seems like at these shows, you mentioned that the electric cars and self-driving is a big thing, but there always seems to be one of the futuristic cars. And I don't know, as we talk about self-driving cars and autonomous vehicles, what is actually futuristic anymore? Would it be a flying car, or is there something that they're going to unveil this week that's going to surprise all of us?
That's interesting, because all the talk about self-driving and these models that everybody's aiming at introducing in the next few years have kind of moved the horizon of anticipation out to the 2020 timeframe. You know, exactly what are these vehicles going to look like? And it's kind of taken some of the sheen off the usual auto show exercise of bringing out a concept vehicle that might be coming out in a year or two. And you know what? It's a really interesting point that there is not a lot of excitement about, say, a concept car that's powered by gasoline or even electricity that's going to be coming out in a couple of years. All the talk is what are self-driven cars going to look like, and when are we going to see them? I mean, there was a supplier who actually came out with an interesting concept car yesterday, Yanfeng, which is a Chinese company, in a joint venture with a company called Adient, which used to be part of Johnson Controls, and they were demonstrating yesterday a really interesting self-driving concept car. It had three modes: family mode, meeting mode, and lounge mode. So in family mode, the seats would kind of tilt toward each other slightly to encourage interaction, you know, as you're driving along driverlessly. In meeting mode, the front seats slid all the way to the back, and some little tables popped out of the back so that you could have some workspace. I mean, that's what you're kind of seeing, is how is the next generation of cars going to be like rolling living rooms, and how are the companies going to make use of the space? And you're just going to see more of that in the future.
What do you see for the coming year in terms of auto sales in the U.S.? Is it going to be a weak year, another decently strong year?
Well, that's what's interesting. And one of the other major themes kind of buzzing throughout NIA so far has been discussion of Donald Trump's position on trade, you know, where he's been tweeting automotive CEOs about their jobs in Mexico. And an interesting perspective came from Carlos Ghosn the other day, who's the CEO of Nissan. He said, look, you know, any president of any country is going to want to protect their jobs first. I understand that. What he said, basically paraphrasing, what he likes about Trump is that already he has been responsible for a jump in consumer confidence. And because of the prospect of his administration and his pro-growth tilt, Ghosn said they actually are now finally looking at the prospect of more sales in 2017 than in 2016, which was a record, 17.55 million sales in the U.S. So people are pretty optimistic about the year ahead, maybe even thinking that it'll be an eighth record year of U.S. sales, and we just had the seventh.
Dale Buss is a journalist for Forbes, a contributor to Chief Executive, and also former Wall Street Journal contributor as well, with us from Michigan and the Detroit Auto Show. Dale, thanks as always for being with us.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
You can follow Dale on Twitter at DaleDBus. You can also follow the Detroit Auto Show at NAIAS Detroit, and you can find them at NAIAS.com like Auto Show also on Facebook. It is 5:49 here on the opening bell. Just before we go, another note on autos. Ford Motor Company this morning is trading up almost 2% pre-market. General Motors is trading up about 3.5% as we head toward the opening bell.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
5:54 back here on the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures up 8 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed. For the latest now on commodities and agriculture, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Let's start the report with some very good news in the marketplace yesterday. Live cattle futures climbed to a 9-month high yesterday, extending gains from the previous session. Chart-based and investment fund buying, according to traders and analysts, funds are putting big money back in the cattle market. Feeder cattle and lean hog futures also moved higher at the Mercantile Exchange, with feeders reaching the highest level since August. And apparently funds are taking the long positions in the cattle market. And hogs also gaining support from the strength in cattle. So good day yesterday with the nearby cattle contract, February up $2.52. And January feeder cattle contract up $3.22, and some of those contracts will be trading with expanded margins, or I should say limits, today in the marketplace. Yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade, soybeans firmed up, recovering from weakness in overnight trading on technical buying and some lingering concerns about weather in South America. However, reports are that they're in for some drier weather in South America, and that could put downward pressure on our prices later. Today, of course, we'll get the final production figures and the supply-demand stocks figures from the USDA. It's the annual report on crop production. And today, Farm Bureau here in Phoenix will end its convention trying to figure out what's ahead, because we still don't know who will be Secretary of Agriculture. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuels.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. And now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Outlook for today. This is Wednesday, January 11th, 2017. A major speech later today by the Chamber of Commerce President. Thomas Donohue delivers his annual State of American Business Address. Also today, more confirmation hearings continue. Jeff Sessions is back before senators on Capitol Hill, the Attorney General nominee. Several of the other hearings, including the one for the Secretary of Education, have been delayed. Also, the CIA director confirmation hearing has been delayed while the Senate and all of the paperwork gets in, including those ethics disclosures that some had been concerned about. The Senate will hold an all-night voting session tonight into Thursday. Budget reconciliation votes are on the agenda. Those votes won't appeal or repeal the Affordable Care Act, but will clear the way for that vote to be taken. Also, Paris, France attends the Conference on Middle East Peace today in Brussels. They will meet with members of the EU. Foreign ministers will gather there, and members from London's Parliament and the government there will also join in that bilateral meeting. All of those things could drive the markets today for this Wednesday, January 11th. We'll continue to follow your money throughout the morning next on the Steve Cochran Show throughout the morning, and be back tomorrow morning with another edition of the Opening Bell. Until then, I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a great day.